Welcome to another edition of View from the Bleachers Radio. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and today I am joined by, I would say special guest, but you've been here before, Chris. I'm joined by Chris Neitzel, author of a book about the Cubs, and we'll get to that in just a second. But Josh and Sean were not able to make it due to work commitments, and so what we're looking at today is a little bit of a different show. And I hope you guys will like it as a result. But let's talk a little bit about Chris. Chris joined us about, what was it, Chris? Three, four weeks ago now,
I guess? It was end of February when we made our roster predictions. I think it was right prior to spring training.
Yeah, I guess it was farther along than I thought it was. It doesn't seem like it was that far off, but I guess it was. Chris joined us, and Chris is the author of a book about the Cubs. Chris, where can they find the book, and tell us a little bit about the book?
Well, the book is called Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's 105 Years, and I think I'll be adding the 106 this fall. The easiest way is Amazon.com. It just came out in Kindle, and the Kindle's only $5.49, which I'm really promoting the Kindle because, believe it or not, us authors, we get just as much for Kindle price as we do for the $13.99, I believe it's right now on Amazon for the paperback.
But, is that right?
Yeah. Authors, we do about the same. So I push the Kindle and say, hey, for all those, I'm an old guy. I'm 45 years old. So I still prefer the paperback, hard copy, whatever you want to call it. But I know a lot of people like the electronic version, and it's only $5.49 on the electronic. But it's just basically, in a real quick nutshell, it's really topical because of, with the 100th anniversary of Wrigley Field, this book goes through 105 reasons, logical reasons, why the Cubs haven't won, and dismisses all those things such as curses and things like that. And I really appreciate you having me on, and I've been sporadically been able to write a little bit, and I hope to get back to that soon. And I might have dropped some of the excerpts from the book, because they always seem to come up when the Cubs are in the midst of another losing season.
Most definitely, and for those of you guys who didn't catch his little comment that he prefers the regular print paperback version, you're not lying on that. If anybody could hear the outtakes of the show, the technology aspect behind the show before just getting started was enjoyable. So it's definitely – I could see how you would probably gravitate towards the actual book. But I kid, and what we've got today is a show a little bit about reviewing the month so far. I know we've got a couple of days left, including a series starting this week with the Reds. But, we wanted to talk a little bit about what we've seen so far, which has not been all that promising. But just kind of talking a little bit about each of the players, just, rapid fire about each of them. And the concept here is going to be talking about whether or not what we've seen so far is going to be better going forward, worse going forward, or about the same. In other words, what we've seen from them so far is about what we can expect. So, it's going to be a very simple concept, more, or better, worse, or about the same. We're going to just take a quick, second or two on each player, run through those guys, and hopefully you can share your comments in the comments section of the post and kind of give us your thoughts and your feedback in terms of how you feel about the players that we've seen so far. Before we get to that real quick, though, Chris, for our listeners, you can follow us on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com, search for View from the Bleachers, you'll find our Facebook page on there. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am at VFTB, that stands for View from the Bleachers. Sean, who is not here, is at Powell_Sean, and Sean is spelled S-E-A-N. And then Josh is at JC Stats. And Chris, where can they find you?
At 105, at BBCG 105 Reasons.
Okay, so you make it nice and easy for them to understand and remember it. but yes, and I am following Chris on Twitter, and he's a good follow, so go out there and follow him, and hopefully you'll be able to gain some followers as a result of some of the information that he's tweeting out. Maybe you can get some retweets and piggyback off of his content. Also, you can follow us on iTunes, and we encourage you to do that. Go to iTunes, search for VFTB, and you will find the show. Please subscribe to the show, rate the show, and review the show. That helps our rankings, and our goal is to be able to be in the top 100 to 250 professional podcasts on iTunes. That helps our visibility, and it helps get listeners, and as a result, helps us feel validated for what we do. So if you like the show, take a minute to rate it, take a minute to review it, and we would be appreciative. And finally, you can contact us, get interactive with us on the email, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. We did have an email that came through today from one of our regular emailers asking a little bit about Darwin Barney, and we're going to talk about him for a brief second, but I'm going to probably talk about him more in a post probably tomorrow morning, and so hopefully he'll get it there as well. So, Chris, let's jump right in. Let's just kind of run through player by player, and again, we're just going to kind of rapid-fire these and talk a little bit about what we've seen so far and whether or not we see something more or less going forward. So let's start with Wellington Castillo. Key numbers for Castillo, 4 home runs so far, but a split line of just 246, 288, 449. What do you think, Castillo? Are we going to see better from Castillo, or is this what we're going to get from him?
Well, I would, you know, when you're dealing with a team like the Cubs, you've got to kind – you can't – we can't throw everybody out, and he's one – I would say we could see better from him. If you could just, obviously that's a pretty pathetic walk rate when you see him only walk 3 times. But, from all metrics that you see, he's a good defensive catcher. He does have a little bit of pop, you know, and you can say this about a lot of guys in this lineup. If he's your 7th or 8th hitter, you're okay. So I'm going to say we're going to see a little better. Like I said, he's 27, which, you know, it's not really young, but for a catcher, catchers are so scarce. I like to say keep them and hope to get better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to take the better argument as well. The biggest thing that I think Castillo has lacked this year is the on-base percentage. Last year he hovered right around 350. This year he's at 288. If you look at his numbers, slugging is up this year by a little more than 50 points. So, and that's primarily because he's got already half the home run totals that he had last year. Last year he finished the year with 8. He's already up to 4 this year, and I think that power is going to continue to develop for him. So if he can raise that on-base percentage to somewhere right around 350 and keep that slugging percentage at around 450 like it's at now, all of a sudden you're talking about an 800 OPS player, and I like that. So I think Castillo is going to be better, and I think a lot of it has to do with just drawing a few more walks, getting on base just a little bit more. And that can come in the form of hits as well. So I think we're both in agreement. We're going to say Wellington Castillo's better days are coming. Anthony Rizzo is next. I went on record at the beginning of the year and said Anthony Rizzo was going to finish in the top 10 in NL MVP voting. And so far, I think he's doing enough to at least begin to enter the discussion. He's got a ways to go in terms of driving in some runs and beginning the offensive production. But are you going to say more or less, or about the same from Anthony Rizzo? It's a tough call based on what we saw last year.
Well, I'll say more, and I think, first of all, he's only 24 years old. You know, one thing that I really noticed the other day, you know, he could be a borderline Gold Glove first baseman, which, you know, first base, you know, and one of the things that I, when in researching my book, you know, the Cubs haven't had a lot of Gold Glove anythings other than Ryan Sandberg playing second base. You know, first base gets dismissed a lot. He's a very good defensive player, and he does have a very nice walk rate. When you see an OBP of 385, you know, almost 100 points better than his batting average, and an OPS over 800, you know, he's the kind of guy that I think if you had a legitimate power hitter behind him or in front of him, you'd see his numbers really flourish. But unfortunately, he is that guy in this lineup. And that's a lot for a 24-year-old. So I see him getting better, and he's definitely one of the few bright spots that we have.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the fielding. I think this year the numbers show that he hasn't been as good as I think maybe you were thinking. His WAR for fielding, and again, there's not really a great fielding metric, but his defensive WAR right now is a negative number, and that's not the best. But again, there's probably numbers that you would see that would say that he's good. So fielding is just such a different animal than the other offensive statistics. But I think we're going to see more from Anthony Rizzo going forward this year. I don't know how much more, but I think, you know, if I can see an 850 to 900 OPS season from him, I would be thrilled. Right now he's hovering right around 816. And I think, you know, I think a lot of it just has to do with, we just need to see a little bit more power, a little bit more, you know, a few more doubles, a few more just extra base hits from Rizzo to cap with the home runs that I think will come as the weather starts to heat up. Because he's drawing walks, he's getting on base. I think we just need to see a little bit more power for him to begin to enter that top 10 MVP case. Next name on the list is Darwin Barney. I don't really know what to say about Darwin Barney. If you're looking at his baseball reference page, he's hitting 108, and And with that, I still have a hard time saying whether or not we're going to see more or better from him, because I begin to wonder whether or not Barney's going to be on this team very much longer. I don't see him getting in the lineup consistently, so I'm going to say better just because he can't possibly get worse.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say better. I am happy that Renteria has basically chosen not to make him the everyday guy, just to make him the everyday guy. And Bonifacio's gotten, most of the looks, and even Valbuena at second base. The unfortunate thing is you just don't see much value now out of Barney. So I guess if you're saying, is he going to hit better than 108? I would hope so. But I don't, I've seen enough of him now to know this is not a major league offensive player. Sure, he's got a great glove, but there's lots of guys you could say that about.
Starlin Castro is next, and Starlin Castro has had a nice rebound to the season, hitting .292, .320, .448 slash line with a .768 OPS. What do you think, Chris? Better, worse going forward, or about the same?
I would say about the same, maybe a little. I mean, I don't think he'll hit .292. I think his power numbers will go up a little bit. He's another guy, and I'm going to sound cliched here, but kind of like Rizzo, that I think if you had some other major league threats around him, he might be a little bit better. I think you got the defensive metrics down more than me, but I think he's pretty good as far as the range factor and stuff like that. He still has, you're going to get those occasional, lapses in the field, but he still is only 24. I'm going to say, I'll say about the same.
Mm-hmm. I think this is exactly what we can expect from Starlin Castro. I think this is the exact type of player he will be. Right now, if you look at his past numbers, 2012 was what many consider his best year. He hit, 2011, hit 207 hits that year, hit 307, and was 23rd in the MVP balloting, was an all-star. Just a great year as a 21-year-old. And I think when you look at that year, 307 batting average, 341 on base, 432 slugging for an OPS of 773. Right now this year he's hitting 768 OPS. I think this is what we're going to see from Castro. I don't see him as an 800 OPS guy unless you start to see the more powerful Castro coming out, a 20 to 25 home run guy, which I feel like he has potential to do that, but maybe not until he's 28, 29 years old. So for right now, I think about the same, and I'm happy with it. If I can get this out of Castro all year, I'm more than happy with that. Mike Olt is next on the list, and we've got Mike Olt hitting .185 with a OPS here right now at .663. Mike Olt, better, worse, or the same going forward?
Well, I'm going to let my Cubby Blue Kool-Aid here and say better. I know that they've made a commitment and said he's going to get like 10 to 15 days of regular bats, and we're, I don't know, maybe a third of the way into that, maybe a little bit more. I think you got to ride him out, and I'm hoping better. If he could just get that average up a little bit, he's never going to be a high average hitter, but he does, in the past at least, he has shown that he can take a walk. He's got special power, at least, from what I've seen of him, he looks like being an adequate third baseman. You at least got to see what you have out of this guy. And there's no reason not to let him play. And I'll say better with a lot of hope involved.
Well, I'm beginning to start to wonder about what the comp would be. And I've been trying to think about what would be a good Major League Baseball comp to Mike Olt. I don't think we've seen enough at bats to really make the baseball reference comps accurate enough, but a name that came to mind for me was Rob Deer. Just a guy that could hit the ball, show his power, but did he really have much else than that offensively? And I'm beginning to wonder if maybe that's what Mike Olt is. It's just a guy that can hit for power, but it's never going to hit for a high average. And I'm beginning to think that maybe that might be what we see out of him. I hope I'm wrong. But Rob Deer is a guy that just keeps coming to mind religiously, and I worry that might be all we see out of Mike Olt. So I'm going to say about the same, unfortunately.
Okay.
And I like Mike Olt. I'm rooting for him, but I'm beginning to lose faith. Junior Lake is next on the list here. Junior Lake is time's up. Maybe that's Mike Olt calling, and he's disagreeing.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I closed off on the den, but not that closed off. Okay.
No, you're fine. Junior Lake is next, and I think Junior Lake has been a little bit disappointing. I got an email from a fan the other day asking about what's going on with Junior Lake, and he wanted to know, you know, was he called up too soon? And I think what people forget to look at with Junior Lake is he wasn't really a hugely top prospect. You know, he wasn't a guy like a Javier Baez or a Starlin Castro or a Chris Bryant. He was kind of a middle of the top 20 type of prospect. And, you know, I think Junior Lake's young and he's showing he's young. And I think we're going to see better from him this year, but I don't know how much better. I think he's a platoon guy. I don't think he's an everyday starter.
Yeah, you kind of hit it right on the head, and that the people that I've, you know, in the little bit of context that I've made through writing the book and some of the prospect people that I know and things, that he was never, you're exactly right. He's never viewed as a top prospect. A lot of them will use and say he's got the skill set, you know, and he looks the part, but you'll find more doubters about Junior Lake than you will people that think he's ever going to turn into anything. That said, there's times where he just makes your head spin and you're like, wow, that, you know, when he knocks a couple out like he did, I think he's had a two homer game this year. Maybe not. Maybe that was spring training, but he shows flashes. But I think once again, I think if I was to say better, I'd be just, you know, that's just wishful thinking. You're probably right. He's probably a platoon guy that you know, looks the part and probably can hit lefties and probably going to have a hard time adjusting any a good right-handed pitcher.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to curb our expectations with Lake. I see him as a useful piece going forward, but I don't see him as an everyday piece once the things shake out, especially in the outfield. So I think you kind of have to know what you're going and getting there. Next one here is Emilio Bonifacio, who's been a little bit of I don't know what the word would be. I guess a spark plug for this team in the beginning months. And right now, Bonifacio is hitting .333 with a .388 on base percentage and a .400 slugging, second highest OPS plus on the team, and realistically second highest OPS on the team. So just, you know, playing out of his mind. Is he going to be this good all year, or is he going to see some regression?
You know, you're definitely going to see some regression. I will say, though, as I pat myself on the back, I was very happy when they got him, and I remember thinking how pathetic it was that I was excited that they got Emilio Bonifacio, but he's a guy I'm really surprised that he was DFA'd by, I think it was the Royals, and, you know, if you look, he's had some success, and he does have the versatility that he has, and he does have elite speed. I mean, you know, that's he's been caught twice, but he's got 9 swipes for the Cubs, which is pretty good. But the fact that they can put him all over the diamond, I really like him as a valuable piece. And he's the kind of guy that I wouldn't mind. I know that everybody that we have that has any success becomes a trade chip. But when you got a guy that you can play in center, second, short, and I don't think he's going to be a 788 OPS guy for very long, but I think he's a definite usable part. Unfortunately, he is going to, we're going to see worse as the season goes on.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a misleading start to him because he's definitely not this good. I tend to say regression and severe regression. I am not quite on the Bonifacio bandwagon, and I refuse to buy my ticket because I just don't believe in him, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. Nick Schierholz is the other regular on the team right now so far, and Nate is less than desirable so far. Hasn't hit a home run and really just has not been the kind of player that you wanted to see from him this year, given the fact that he had a really nice year last year and was looked at as potential trade bait this year. So Schierholz is going to be better, worse, or this is what we can expect from Schierholz, who's 30 years old now.
Well, I think you'll see better. I don't know how much better. You probably should have traded him when his value was a little bit higher. He falls into that lump, and some of the guys we're going to be discussing in a few minutes, where you just, you know, other than swinging left-handed, to me, you know, I don't think they bring much to the table. So you'll see better. I don't know if we'll see anywhere near the numbers that we saw last year.
Yeah, I agree. So far, the bench has been made up of essentially 5 guys: Luis Valbuena, Ryan Sweeney, Ryan Kalish, Justin Ruggiano, and John Baker. Is there anybody there that stands out to you as a clear they're going to be better? Or is this a group of guys that we're seeing what we're seeing and this is what they are?
Well, I think Ruggiano would have been – I mean, I think if he wouldn't have had the severe hamstring injury that he had, I think you could have expected to see a little bit out of him. You know, looking at his power speed numbers in the past couple of years, I would have put him a notch above the Sweeney-Sheerholtz combination there. If you're going to – the thing that I get frustrated with, you know, as we all have many frustrations when we watch the Cubs, it just to see the Sheerholtz and Sweeney and, you know, just seems so similar in a lot of the same skill sets. And to be quite frankly, I mean, if you look at them, none of them are really doing that well. So I was kind of on the Kalish thing to begin with, thinking, you know, if you're going to play a guy, he's younger, he can run. I still doubt he's going to be an everyday major league regular, but I'd rather see him getting at bats than Sweeney, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. I think this bench is about what we can expect. I'm not really a big fan of any of them. I think John Baker, probably his days as the backup catcher may be numbered. He is actually a negative OPS plus, which basically, if you're unfamiliar with that stat, is kind of a measure, league average adjusted to the ballpark when it takes into account OPS. And it's considered what you are in terms of related to average. 100 is considered average. And so if you are like 110, you're 10% better than the average player. So for John Baker to be negative 26, I mean, that's just ridiculously bad. And so I think as a result, that's why you've seen so far the 2-for-22 start. 9 strikeouts and 24 plate appearances. Just not a very good start, but, you know, the backup catcher, I think, is not really much of a concern for this team at this point. Clay Hill on speed dial.
Yeah, that's exactly, you took the words right out of my mouth. I said maybe John Baker's the new Coy Hill that we could never shed, but yeah, it's, hey, that's why if you want to make the major leagues, become a catcher, because when you see guys like putting up these kind of numbers, and draw out a paycheck, it's pretty amazing.
Well, let me ask you this. If Theo and Jed came to you today and said, Chris, listen, man, we've got to make a move at backup catcher. We're deciding between John Baker or Coy Hill. Who do you elect to go with?
Oh, boy. Is death an option?
Nope.
I guess I'd have to go Baker just because I've seen the Coy Hill show so much, but Baker's 33 here. As I look at that, I knew he was older. I don't know what happened there with the whole, they were all excited when I'm the guy's name escapes me now, Kurtaris. They were really excited. I thought when they brought in Kurtaris to be the backup catcher.
Yeah,
so
Kurtaris. Yep.
Kurtaris. Yeah. So, I guess I'd take Baker, but, ugh.
Well, let me give you some numbers that may change your mind. So Coy Hill is currently with the Philadelphia Phillies organization. He's playing for their Lehigh Valley Pig. I think it's Iron Pigs, I think is the name of their team. And so that's their AAA affiliate. So far this year in 12 games, he's seen 43 plate appearances. So he's obviously gotten more time than John Baker. But here are his numbers. Hitting .366, .381, .561 slugging for a .942 on-base or OPS.
AAA.
He's got one home run, knocked in 9 runs, has 3 doubles, a triple. He's playing out of his mind. We need to bring back Coy Hill.
Yeah, bring him back. What the heck? Why not?
You know, and they're about the same age. I'm not kidding with you. I would probably take Coy Hill over.
Well, I would too. Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. But I think that the backup catcher is the least of our worries. Moving on to the rotation, we're looking at basically 5 guys, essentially, and now very, very soon we will see guy number 6 is Jake Arrieta, scheduled to make his debut this year on Wednesday. So Jeff Samardzija has been the guy that many have considered the ace, and yet, really, you know, the Cubs have not treated him as if he were the ace. They've not signed him to a long-term deal, and they've not supported him offensively. So Jeff Samardzija, as a result, has an ERA of 1.53 over 35 innings of work and has no wins to show for it. Obviously, his ERA is a little bit of a misnomer. If you look at his FIP, which is fielding independent pitching, you've got an ERA of 2.77. So he's bound for some regression, but how much do you see? Are we seeing Jeff Samardzija, Jeff Samardzija the superstar, Jeff Samardzija the ace pitcher, or are we seeing just Jeff Samardzija the hot starter?
I'd say a little bit of the hot starter. I think he is a quality major league starter. He's definitely not a 1.53 ERA. You're right on the regression where when you look at the FIP numbers. Would I like to see him lock him up? Sure, but I'd like to see him lock him up at non-ace price. And I think Jeff's looking at, and Jeff and his agent are looking at ace prices right now, and I just don't think that's what the Cubs are going to do. And if they can get anywhere near what they got for Garza, then obviously that's what you do.
Okay. So would you sign him as a two guy if you wanted number two guy stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's 29, but I would say his arm is a little bit, and this might sound cliched or weird, but I think he has a young arm. I mean, you know, he didn't really pitch that much in college. He's shown up to be a horse the last couple. I mean, he throws, this is probably going to be his third year of 200 innings if he's shown no signs of injury. There are some guys, and I talk about this a little bit in my book. Sometimes with pitchers, we think, you know, like Hamill, who we'll talk about in a second, you think 31, 32. Sometimes pitchers don't really get it till then. And I could show you Dave Duncan's one of my reasons. And if you look at what the Cardinals did with a lot of guys that they'd get, Chris Carpenter, they didn't get till he's 31, 32. So Samardzija could still have some great days ahead of him. In a perfect world, I'd love to see him stay with the Cubs, but they're not going to pay him anywhere near what, the recent Greinke or somebody like that, or there was another, I'm forgetting, but there was another comparable pitcher contract that his agent was talking about that there's no way the Cubs are going to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Samardzija is showing what he can do, but I don't see the Cubs investing in number one starter stuff for him, although I'm beginning to maybe wonder if they should. It's a tough call. He's 29 this year, so he's beginning to get to the point where he is a little older. And you could spend that money elsewhere, and especially if you could deal them and get young arms. But it's a hard call. I think starting pitching is one of the hardest things to invest in the majors. It's a lot harder to predict whether or not somebody's going to blow out as opposed to a hitter, where it just is a lot more likely that you're going to see 15 to 20 years out of a hitter than a pitcher. So it's a hard call. Two other guys pitching out of their mind for the most part, aside from a rough outing the other night, is Jason Hamill and Travis Wood. And I think these two are interesting. One is Jason Hamill. I don't know if you've looked at it, but do you have the page up?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then that doesn't, have you seen his whip yet? Don't look if you haven't.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. What would you guess? I shouldn't have said it. Yeah. If you look at his whip so far, 0.69, that is ridiculous. He's allowing just four hits per nine innings. Just outstanding pitching by Jason Hamill so far, and I don't know what to attribute it to, because this is a guy that's had an ERA hovering between four and a half and five all of his career, so he's not a guy that's really had a history of dominating. He had one nice year in Baltimore where he had an ERA under four, but other than that, he's always had an ERA over four and really close to five. So I think you've got to say that he's going to get worse, but maybe he's figured something out. I don't know. He's, for the most part, always pitched in a tough area, either in the American League or in Colorado. So yeah, maybe this is a good spot for him. I don't know. But I'm not quite ready to invest in him. But maybe if we can keep seeing this out of him for the remainder of the trade deadline period, we can get a better haul for him.
Yeah, don't ever sell the short, the adjusting from the American League to the National League. And I think that's a lot of what you're seeing. I like him as a pitcher. I've watched him pitch a couple times. Unfortunately, I think he's going to be, you know, I think this has been Theo and Jed's MO the last couple of years, is he's definitely the flip guy this year. Usually you can count. You remember, in the American League, you're facing nine hitters. National League, it's usually eight and maybe even seven guys. Usually the eighth hitter is pretty weak, so it's a big difference, and I think that's, you know, if he has the success, I'd love to keep him, but I think he'll be a flip guy.
Yep, I agree. Travis Wood is the other guy that's been pitching out of his mind, had a rough outing the other night, but Travis Wood's been doing it with the bat as well. I think this is the kind of Travis Wood we're going to see going forward, and I actually think Travis Wood's going to be better going forward.
Yeah, I've been on the Travis Wood extension bandwagon, been tweeting that out a little bit and things like that, is that, you know, he's a 27-year-old left-hander. you know, I don't see much with the way he pitches. I think you're not going to see much of an injury risk. I think he's a great 2-3 starter to have in long term. You know, somewhere along the line, we got to start locking some of these guys up just to, if anything, just for, you know, for to have, so we don't go in every year and then have to remake the pitching staff. And you're obviously not going to have a staff full of aces. And Travis Wood is, to me, strikes as the kind of guy that it, I'm convinced that he's the real deal. I was happy when they made the trade, looking at what he had done in the Cincinnati minor league system. And I would say better. And he might be the Cubs' lone all-star when it's all said and done.
Yep. Looking at the rest of the rotation, Edwin Jackson and Carlos Villanueva have been the other two starters. I think we can exclude Villanueva from this list for right now since he's coming out of the rotation, and I don't think he can get any worse than he's been. But Edwin Jackson's a name that I think is interesting. Do you think he's going to be better going forward? He's by far the leader in the clubhouse in terms of the number of walks and just really overall not pitching very well, just getting hit hard and just not pitching well. What do you expect from Edwin Jackson going forward?
I'd say he get a little bit better. I think that, you know, we get blinded by the fact sometimes that he got the big contract, and in retrospect, it's really not even that big of a contract. I think it was 4 years, 52. It's one of the only ones that, you know, that Theo and Jed have invested in, though. You know, he's probably a good fourth starter, maybe even, actually, he's probably on a good team, he's a fifth starter. But he's always shown that upside. You know, he's a guy who threw a no-hitter once in the major leagues. He's looked dominant at times. But you're right, he really is getting hit and hit hard. So, I you know what, to be honest, I don't know what his velocity like, if it's up a tick or down a tick. I'm sorry, down a tick more than likely. But, I would think he'd see better than what you're seeing right now.
Okay, close your eyes. Don't look at the screen because I know you probably haven't looked at this stat yet. But so here's to give you an idea. All right, Jason Hamill, I mentioned it earlier. His hits per nine ratio was 4.4. To give you an example of a couple other ones, Jeff Samardzija, 7.6. Travis Wood, 10.0. Where do you think these two guys fall in terms of hits per nine? Carlos Villanueva and Jose Veras.
Oh, Jose Veras. Okay.
I think the numbers are going to surprise you.
Well, I would say that Villanueva is probably like 15 or so, 15 to 17.
Okay. And what about Veras?
Oh my gosh. I would say the same thing, like 12 to 15, something like that.
Okay. Jose Veras is at 9.5. So he is less than Travis Wood in terms of hits per nine. But his walks per nine are 15.9. So he's just walking people up and down the road. Carlos Villanueva's hits per nine is 18.9.
Oh my gosh.
So he's basically, to put that in perspective for those people who have no idea what this stat is, hits per nine is a ratio in terms of how many hits you give up if you threw nine in, for every nine innings pitched. So this guy's basically giving two hits up every inning that he pitches. Really more than that. It's like 2.1 every inning of work that he does. It's ridiculous. And then not only that, but then you factor in the walks, which aren't a lot. It's basically,
Villanueva's only 0.9.
Yeah, he hasn't been walking, guys. Hits have been walking. You know, hits have been his problem. And so as a result, he has not been good. It's not been a pretty sight for Carlos Villanueva, and I don't really know how to fix him. Let's lump the bullpen in as one unit to kind of make things go a little smoother. But so at the beginning of the year, I made a prediction. This was one of my fearless predictions, that the Cubs bullpen, when all was said and done, was going to finish in the top five in terms of ERA as a bullpen unit in the National League. So I'm going to give you a quiz here. Where do you think they rank out of the top in the top 15 there of National League teams as a unit, as a bullpen so far in team ERA?
Ooh, well, with Veras in there, yep. I'd have to see their. I'd go no better than 10 to 12, something like that.
Okay. Yep, you're right on the money. They were 11th right now.
Okay.
So currently the fifth place team is the Pittsburgh Pirates with a team ERA as a bullpen of 2.66. The Cubs rank 11th with 3.91. So my question to you would be, where am I at on my prediction? Are you buying what I'm selling, that at the end of the year, when we look at this team ERA as a bullpen, they will be in the top five, or are you selling that argument like crazy?
Well, it depends on the usage, because I would buy it if you – I mean, you got young arms like Rondon and Grimm. You know, Strope's had some bad outings. And I'm still wondering what their thoughts are on Vizcaino down there, because, you know, it's really you know, the blown saves the last couple of years have just been amazing. And you know, and when you look at the team and you look at their starters, they shouldn't be as bad as they are. I mean, I don't know how many blown saves they have this year already, but I know last year they were close to, you know, they were definitely in the league lead. So it's almost, I wish they would have spent, like last year they had, they were really close on Grilly. And if you could imagine just one, you know, if you'd had an anchor closer instead of a hope for closer like Varus, then I think you'd be dead on. Oh, so what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is, if you quit using Varus and we quit throwing, you know, Russell, I don't know if Russell's just overused or what. But I think Rondon, Grimm, Strope, those kind of guys could keep up those numbers, definitely.
Well, I want to end the show with a little bit of bright news. The Cubs currently come into the year with a playoff odds percentage based on Baseball Prospectus's odds calculator here of what chance you have to make the playoffs. So here's their current odds right now, 2%. So there you go. So basically what we're saying is there's a chance. I also threw out a stat that was part of the ESPN Power Ranking stat today, that Jason Hamill got his fourth win in April. And do you remember the last time that the Cubs had this is a good question for the historian, the last time the Cubs had a pitcher that had four wins in the month of March/April, since sometimes the season starts in March?
Well, I would think it'd be somebody back in 08, when not 1908, but 2008, when we were decent.
You're right. We had two pitchers in that year, and that was dead on. Who were the two pitchers? You probably saw my Twitter feed. You're cheating.
No. I wrote a book about this stuff. Come on, give me a little credit. Dempster Lilly?
No. You got one of them. Dempster's one of them.
Zambrano?
Correct. Both of them had four wins that month. And so what I posted was, hey, the last time this happened, Cubs made the playoffs. Just saying. Just saying. It could happen.
That might be the only connection you find, though.
Probably. Well, that's going to do it for this show. Remember, we are always looking for good email questions. They don't have to be Cubs related. Heck, they don't even have to be baseball related. We had a question. I don't know if you heard the show. It might have been 2 weeks ago, Chris, but we had a listener write in asking us for our mustard power rankings.
Oh, cool. I like any kind of ranking stuff like that. That's fun stuff.
I agree. So if you want to know our power rankings, we'd be glad to give them to you on anything that you want to know. Just write us in there, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. It's a great way to get in touch with us. Ask us any questions that you might have. Again, follow us on Twitter, rate the show, review us on iTunes. We would very much appreciate it. And again, Chris, plug the book again. Where can people find you?
Amazon.com is the easiest way to get it. You can follow me on Twitter at BBCG105Reasons. Amazon is the quick and easiest way.
What's the name of the book again?
It's Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's Been 105 Years.
Great. And
Chris, 106, actually.
Yeah, it'll pretty soon. Chris, yeah. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Hey,
thanks a lot. Thanks for doing great work on the website as well. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you on in the future. Again, that'll do it for this edition of the View from the Bleachers Radio. We appreciate you listening, and appreciate you giving us the feedback on iTunes. And until next time, I'm Joe. For Josh and for Sean and for Chris, that's going to do it. Have a great day.